Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Mac, and you are listening to Mac's Musings. My guest tonight is going to be Sébastien Godin. Hopefully I pronounced his name right. If not, oh well, I'm sure he'll correct me. So I am going to be dialing his number in just a second here, and hopefully we will be talking with him soon. He goes by Seb, which is actually easier than saying his whole name. So here we go. And hopefully it'll be dialing soon. And I don't know why it's taking so long. Here we go. Hopefully he'll answer. And still ringing. And still ringing. So.
Hello?
Hello, Seb.
Yes.
Can you hear me all right?
Yes, I hear you well.
Okay, good. This is Mac, obviously. We're on the air, so we could just get started right away. Now,
For sure. Sorry, I was just doing some running around.
Oh, no, that's okay, because I did call a little early, but that's because I have trouble with Blog Talk Radio. So if I start early and it works out okay, then I can start the show early. But if it doesn't work, sometimes I'm like a half an hour later, so.
yeah, for sure. No worries. I'm here all evening, so I'm good to settle in now whenever you're ready.
Okay, good. Excuse me. So in 2011, now I don't know if this was your first one. It's your first one on IMDb. Eating Out was a short. You were the producer, director, writer, cinematographer, editor, and you acted in it. So what was that about, and was that actually your first experience or just like your first professional?
Well, it was neither in a sense. My first experience was I made like little experimental videos when going as far back as to, you know, being a child. I was 15 years old in 2011. That was my first attempt at a narrative short film. It was neat. It hasn't really had much of a life beyond that. It was 15 minutes long. I shot it over the course of a weekend. Lloyd Kaufman from Troma was in it, which for a 15-year-old was, for me, it was very exciting at the time. And you know, it's a fun little short considering the circumstances it was made in. I haven't seen it in years. Don't know if I have a copy of it, honestly.
What was it about?
It was about, if I'm recalling correctly, the plot line concerned a cannibal who used a dating site. I want to say it was inspired by the story from Germany. There was this true crime case. I want to say it was in the late 90s, maybe it was the early 2000s. But regardless, this cannibal had used a dating site to find a victim. And I thought, well, you know, that might be a decent idea for like a dark comedy. I was really trying to flex my comedic muscles at that time for some reason, for some unknown reason, because I've mostly abandoned that now. But yeah, that was the idea, was a cannibal using a dating site to lure a victim.
I either saw that or I saw something similar, because that sounds very familiar to me.
It was, I want to say the actual story was made into a film in 2007 with Thomas Kretschmann and Kerry Russell called Grim Love, which Fangoria produced.
Yeah, I don't think I saw that movie. I actually think that I did see your short because I remember that it was called Eating Out.
It's
unless
possible.
There was another film with.
I'm trying to think of where it would have shown. I don't know if it had much of a festival life. Again, this is like, I mean, it's only 9 years ago, but for me, that's forever. Again, I was 15 years old at the time, so
right.
Memory's a little hazy.
Yeah, I know how it is. I mean, I may be 60, but I do remember what it's like to be 15. So 6 months seems like it's forever. And people that are 25, you know, which, you know, you are now, but when you're 15 and people are 25, they seem like they're old fogies. So, okay, well, so that was a pretty good experience then for you only being 15. I think it was 14, I picked this one because I like the name of it. Bride of the Saucer Monster. You were an actor in that. Was that your first feature film?
Bride of the Saucer Monster. So Bride of the Saucer Monster was made by a friend of mine, an acquaintance of mine named Jerry Williams. Now, what Jerry does is that he often has people do mail-in cameos, basically the idea that you shoot a little scene and it ends up in the movie. And oftentimes he would ask me to just shoot these little vignettes, and I guess that's what that is. I guess that's one of those things I shot a scene for. I honestly don't remember it, and I don't believe I've ever even seen the film. So I don't know where it is. Jerry makes so many films in this manner that they're hard to keep up with. So I don't know what kind of a release it had, or which scene of mine I shot for him even ended up in it.
Oh, interesting. That wasn't the answer I was expecting, but that's interesting.
You know, it can be interesting making $5 movies. You never know what's going to happen.
Well, yeah, in the independent film business, you know, that's what happens. You don't have money to work with, so you work with what you got, and usually it's not much what you have. So I understand all that.
Very true. Yeah.
I may even go back to other films, but for now I'm going to go in the order that I have, but I may go back to something else later. In 2017, you did something called, I picked this one because I thought the name was funny, Flood Blow instead of Blood Flow, Blood Blow.
Yes.
Tell us about that one.
That's an amazing film. Again, I don't know. I think you can watch it on Vimeo. I think you can. I'm not too sure. But it's a wonderful little short film that was made by a guy, a really talented filmmaker named Matt Close, who does these insane pseudo-experimental short films. But Blood Flow was about a dark comedy about a drug that prevents blood flow. And I played a guy who had perpetual nosebleeds. It was a tiny part. I'm only in it for maybe a minute or two in a 20-minute short. But it was one of my favorite roles at the time, and Matt's an amazing filmmaker. If people can find this short, again, I don't know how accessible it is, but if you can find it, it's well worth a watch, because I think for a student film especially, it was very beautifully put together.
Hmm. Oh, that might be one of those that I might want to try to find it. I'm sorry, you were going to say something else?
Oh, no, I was just going to say it's well worth seeking out.
The next year you did something called Lycanimator. You acted in that. You wrote the original screenplay. You were the casting assistant, and you directed. So what was that experience like? Now, I know what it's about, but for any of the listeners, if you would give them a synopsis so they know what it's about.
Yeah, Lycanimator was my first attempt at making a long-form film. It was my first collaboration with a producer, an American named Dustin Hubbard, and it's about a group of friends who go to spend some time in an abandoned old house and find the remnants of a laboratory in the basement, and one of them gets exposed to a chemical which turns them into a werewolf. It's getting a proper DVD release, finally through Wild Eye Releasing this October. There were some issues with the prior release, but it's finally going to be a DVD in the way I intended. It's a bit of a mess, but it's a fun film, I think. It's got a lot to love in it, and it's got a solid cast, and if people who are familiar with independent horror are probably going to recognize a lot of the people in it, like Joel D. Weinkoop and Mark Orchard and Todd Sheets.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah. Okay, let me see. What else did you do here? You've done so many things. I just, picked some. in 2018, you did, I like the name of this one, Johnny Gruesome. You acted in that one. So what was that one about, and what was that experience like?
Oh, that, okay, so Johnny Gruesome was very special. That it came out in 2018. It was shot in 2016, though, the summer of 2016. It was directed by Gregory Lamberson, who is a well-known New York area filmmaker. He did Slime City Massacre, and he worked on Frank Henenlotter's Brain Damage as well. But anyways, he asked me to go to Buffalo for a month, for 2 weeks. Well, it was more like a 2 or 3 week shoot to do behind the scenes on it. I shot all the behind the scenes bonus features that you can see on the DVD. And I'm in a few scenes as one of the students in the high school. It's a great kind of EC Comics style revenge story, in which a rebellious teenager gets murdered by a jealous friend and comes back from the grave as a zombie. It's a very fun film. It has Anthony De La Torre, who's great as Johnny Gruesome. It's got Michael De Lorenzo, who is in Alive, and he was in Phantoms with Peter O'Toole, a bunch of stuff. And that's one of my favorite experiences working in film so far, was having been in that one.
I picked a good one without even knowing it.
Yeah, exactly. It's available through Uncorked Entertainment. You can find it on Amazon, and it's available to rent on iTunes as well, I believe.
Oh, good to know.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I think it should have been the same year, or at least the same year that it came out, was one called Slimoids. I know what that one's about, but for the listeners, if you could give them a synopsis and tell us about that one.
Yeah, Slimoids was something that I kind of shot for fun. It was done over the course of a few weekends, made for no money at all. But it's an homage to, you know, movies like Ghoulies and Hobgoblins, little creature movies, and, you know, the mad scientist genre as well. It's about a mad scientist who's voiced brilliantly by Brink Stevens, legendary Brink Stevens, who's been in more movies than I think even she can recount. But she's a mad scientist in it who creates these three little creatures that go on a rampage. And it's a fun film. You can currently get it on a double feature with another film that my friend Josh Kennedy made called Fungus Among Us through Alpha Video. And I recommend that one. I think it's got a lot of heart.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'll have to look for that one. I've been wanting to see it, but, you know, there's so many movies, and I'm a reviewer, and so I get people sending me their films, whether it's their DVDs or whether it's streaming, and so I've got, like, tons and tons of films that I'm watching, so I don't always get to watch ones that I just want to watch.
No, I understand.
For writing a review. Yeah. But actually, that's one I want to write a review on, with Slimoids. Once I get to see it, I will do that. There was one called Creature from Cannibal Creek. Now, I like this one too, the name of it. You acted in that, and you were the special unit director or something like that. So tell us what that one's about and what that experience was like.
Yeah, that's a really cool movie. It's coming out through Wild Eye Releasing this October on DVD. It's directed by a really talented filmmaker named John Migliori. It's a great throwback to the Roger Corman films of the 60s and 70s, like Creature from the Haunted Sea and stuff like that. It's about a group of cannibals who pick the wrong victim, and the wildlife around him reanimates his corpse as a giant plant creature who seeks his vengeance. And that was kind of another mail-in cameo type deal for me. I play the opening victim, and I shot that sequence. It was a scene I directed for the film, so that's why I have the second unit directing credit.
Mm. So did you have a lot of fun making that one?
Oh, I had a ton of fun. Yeah, I mean, that was a quick shoot. That was a quick shoot. That was like 3 or 4 hours in the forest with my friends. So that's always fun. I've had very few poor experiences making things on my own. I'll just put it that way.
Oh, well, that's good.
Yes. And John was John was a very good director in the sense that he made it very clear what it was he wanted me to do, and gave me much more direction than a lot of people who do these mail-in type cameos usually give. John's a real professional.
Yes, he is. Now there's another one that I know that some of my friends are in this one called Ouija Mummy. You were an actor, and you wrote the screenplay, and you directed that one. So tell us about that one, you know, synopsis, and what that experience was like.
I might have done some tweaks on the screenplay, but really all credit for the script should go to Dustin Hubbard, who wrote it in, like, breakneck pace. The story behind that was I was supposed to do another movie, but plans for it kind of fell through. So I flew out to Florida anyways, and by the time I landed, Dustin had written the script, and we decided, well, that's what we're going to do. More or less, that was the idea. We had some vague ideas for a mummy movie, so we already had costuming and props in the works. But regardless, that's a fun film. It's about a couple who move into a house and uncover a Ouija board and some ancient Egyptian artifacts, and the wife gets possessed by the spirit of an Egyptian princess and goes on a rampage. I'm very fond of that one. It's also coming out on DVD through Wild Eye in October. It's got some beautiful cinematography by Clint Kelly, who really excelled here. And of the collaborations I've had with Dustin Hubbard as a producer, I think that's easily the best one.
Yeah, I've heard from some of my other friends that was a really good experience working on that film.
Yeah, it was a fun one. It was shot very quickly in the Amish section of Sarasota, Florida. And so I think it was like a three-day shoot, which is nuts. It's insane to think that you can make a movie that quickly, but we did it, and the result is really solid, I think.
Yeah, that's another one I'm going to have to watch. Now, this next one, I picked it because I like the name of it. Dino Gore. You were the actor, and you had something to do with the screenplay, and you directed that one as well. So tell us about that one.
My friend Ken Meehan is making a film called Nasty, and Nasty has some fake trailers in it. One of them is Dino Gore. And he was talking to his friend, Jacob Dressler, who later became my friend. But they were talking, they were like, well, Dino Gore would make a great feature, and they thought that I would be the best choice to direct it, and they came to me with the idea, and I rolled with it. The three of us worked out a screenplay together. I got a cast together here in North Bay, and we shot the film. It was meant to be a double feature with Slimoids 2, which didn't happen, but Dino Gore itself is complete. It should be coming out on DVD before the year is over, and the best way to describe it would be imagine Evil Dead meets Carnosaur, because it's an Evil Dead knockoff, except instead of demons, it's dinosaurs.
Ah, interesting. So I know that one had to be a lot of fun shooting that one.
It was. That was another one where it was like three fast, hot days in the summer heat, and in some ways it's my last. I call it my last comedy, and I think I went out with a bang in a sense, because it is very funny, and I can't wait for people to see it.
Let me see, what else do I have here? You did something, or are doing something, called Catch of the Day 2, You Die at Dawn. I say it that way because there's an exclamation point on it. You acted, and you associate producer, I think, on that one. So tell us about that one.
Yeah, that's a James Balsamo film. I got a producing credit because I think I gave him like a couple hundred dollars to help get the film made. And I have a little cameo in it. I'm trying to remember what my role in it is. I think I'm a guy who James's character has harassed in the past, and I'm doing a kind of testimonial video against him. So it's a pretty small part, but James's movies are lunacy. They're so much fun. So I was very happy to help out on that one.
Well, I'm going to go back to 2012, not 1912. I almost said 1912. gonna go back to 2012, and you did something called Fang Bang. Now, obviously, I could figure it out that it's, excuse me, that it's vampires, but tell us about that one.
Similar to Eating Out, that was one I did in high school. It's just a little comedy short. There's no way to see it. It is riddled with copyrighted music. It'll probably never see the light of day, but it's a fun little short. I've used some ideas from it here and there in other stuff, and maybe someday it'll get remade even as a better short, but we'll see. It's neat, though. It's like a group of vampire hunters who try to take care of a vampire next door. I can't remember the details of it. That's another one, like Eating Out, where I haven't actually sat down to watch it in maybe 6 years.
Mm. Yeah, and for a young kid, 6 years is like a century. So, yeah, I get it. In something like 2013, you did Voices from the Forest. Now, that's one, you know, other than there being voices in the forest, I have no idea what that's about. So if you could tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was a 30-minute short film. It was my attempt at the time to make a more serious horror movie. It's absolutely awful. I don't know if you can find a physical copy of it, but friends of mine have told me that torrents of it exist. So I guess that's kind of interesting. It was a possession film, witches, spirit in the forest, possessing people. It was another thing where I kind of just teetered off because I started making it and then called it a day and cut together this 30-minute thing out of it, and it never went anywhere beyond that.
Hmm. Oh, well, that's too bad. It could have been really good. You never know.
You never know. I moved on to other stuff, though, obviously. So.
Well, yeah, because you've got tons of stuff here that you've done. And as a matter of fact, in 2014, or at least that's when it came out, I guess, you did Super Hell 3, Dreams of Horror. Now, I don't know for sure, but the way that it's worded, it sounds like it's an anthology?
That's directed by Johnny Walker, and Johnny's movies are they're a trip. They've got like loose narratives, but they're mostly like weird vignettes set in like weird surrealist worlds. A lot of dream logic. I'm trying to remember my role in that. I think I played like a punk who gets killed and dragged to hell at some point. It's notable for being one of the last movies Robert Zadar did before passing away. So I was in that with, I didn't get to share any time with them, sadly, but with Robert Zadar and Conrad Brooks. I think you can get all three of them on Blu-ray now. They're very strange films. If you like weird, strange films, then they don't get much weirder than that, so.
Well, sometimes those weird films are the ones that are really good. Because
it's
true. Weird, but as long as they're not boring, because the only thing that I can't tolerate in a film is if it's boring. You can be weird, you can be stupid, you can be whatever, but if you're boring, I'll probably end up turning it off, unless I'm getting paid to review it. Other than that, I'm not even going to watch. Oh, and believe me, I've done that with a few where I was getting contracted to review them, and I was thinking as I was watching it, man, if I wasn't getting paid to do this, I wouldn't even be watching this thing. And that's how bad some films are. I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was going to say, and you know, I'll say that much. Johnny's movies are weird. They're never boring.
Yeah, well, that's the best thing, is not to be boring.
Exactly.
You want to be entertained, at least in some way. Like with Plan 9 from Outer Space. Yeah, that's a bad movie, but you've seen it, right?
Oh, yeah, I'm a big fan of Ed Wood.
Yeah, okay, I kind of got that from you, but it doesn't mean you saw every single one of his films, so it didn't hurt to ask. But
no,
that thing was so bad that it was good. I mean, you can't help watching it and thinking, man, this thing really stinks, but yet at the same time, you're thinking, you know what? It's actually kind of good in a way. And then you spend your time trying to figure out what is making it good, because it's certainly not the acting, and it's certainly not the so-called special effects or the directing, or I can't even think of anything that is actually good in it. But it ends up being a kind of a good movie.
Yeah, it's got parts.
Well, yeah. There's this other movie called Teen Alien, and the only reason why I brought it up is because somebody had posted about it, that they finally got to watch it. And that's one of those movies, it's another one kind of like that. It's not like that movie in that it's the same story, but it's that same type of thing where it's so bad, but yet you're intrigued by it, and then you're watching it the whole time wondering, why am I watching this thing? This thing is terrible. But what it's about, if you ever get a chance to see it, what it's about is the reason why it's called Teen Alien is because there's this teenager, supposedly, that is going to high school. But in reality, the teenager is an alien. And so they're going to have this party where they're all dressed up in different costumes and stuff. And so the alien is going to go as themselves instead of, you know, wearing a costume. And it's just, it's so silly. They talk about being, they use the word spooky like 100 different times. And I was like, oh, please don't use that word anymore. But yet I couldn't look away from it because it was that bad and that good at the same time. So sorry about going off the track there.
Not a worry at all.
In 2015, you did something called Out of the Box. And now you can tell me what that's about, because I really don't know. I don't think I've even heard of this one. So I'll let you talk about that one.
Yeah, that's a short film I made. I'm trying to think if it's ever had like any form of release. I don't think it has. It's a short film. It's like 5 minutes long. It's two guys stuck in a room with a box they're not supposed to open, and at the end they do, and a creature comes out and eats one of them, and that's it. It was super simple. I shot it when I was in college, and it's got some good aspects to it from what I remember. But you know, I think we shot in like a day, if that.
Did you get your idea for that from The Twilight Zone?
I got it from, I think I ripped it off from Creepshow with the crate.
Yeah, Creepshow ripped it off from Twilight Zone.
From Twilight Zone, so we ripped
Twilight
it off from
Zone.
Each other.
Yeah. So, because what it was is there's this box, and they're told that if they push, they actually did a movie about it called The Box. And they don't tell people that they got the idea from Twilight Zone, but that's exactly where it came from. Because there's a little box, and they're told that if they push the button, they'll get a bunch of money. And then somebody that they don't know will die. Well, you know, that's very ambiguous. Somebody you don't know could be, you know, anybody. It doesn't make it okay that the person's going to die. So then it's that they have to decide whether they want to press the button in order to get the money, and whether they feel okay that somebody is going to die, but they decide that it's okay because they don't know the person. And then, of course, like Twilight Zones, it's always a more morality story, and so they have to deal with the morality of what, actually the immorality of what they just did. Because you can't just do something like that and leave yourself open and think, oh, yeah, everything's going to be okay because I don't know the person. Well, maybe you don't know them, but maybe you know somebody that knows them and somebody else that knows them that knows them that knows them, and then eventually you get to somebody that knows them, and it could be somebody who's going to find the cure for cancer, or because you don't know. You don't know the future. And that was kind of the whole thing of what it was, that they were shown that they never should have done that. Now, in the movie, it was weird. Did you happen to see that movie, The Box?
Yeah, with Frank Langella and Cameron Diaz.
It was okay, but they made it into some big, you know, alien thing where aliens were trying to figure out which humans were better than other humans, and it was ridiculous. In the old one, it was just a thing that, okay, this is what we're going to do, and you either do it, you either press the button, or you don't press the button. And then they would sit there and look at the box and whether they're going to press it or not, and it wasn't made into a great big, you know, thing like they did in the movie. But then it was a movie, so I guess they had to make it, like, exciting or something. But,
yeah.
Well, I'm sure you can tell I didn't care for the movie that much. In 2016, you did something called The Hole. Now, other than there being a hole somewhere, I don't know what that's about, so I'll let you tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was a non-narrative short. The director was Daniel Cochi, and it was like I'm a guy stuck in a hole, and I'm dying, and there's narration over it detailing my mental process, and it's a very beautiful short. I think it played at a few festivals and didn't really have much of a life beyond that, but I'm not very fond of myself as an actor, truth be told, but that's one I'm very proud of. Yeah.
No, do you not like to act, or you don't like watching yourself act?
I love it. I'm very critical of myself.
Ah. Well, you know, most actors are. And especially the good ones, because if you think that you're all that, then you're not.
No. Because
that's just the way it is. If you think you're great, then you're not. Because any great actor is always critical of their own work. Take Humphrey Bogart. He was always critical of his own work. And he is still considered one of the greatest actors that ever lived. And if you've ever seen any of his movies, you'd know why. So I don't know if you have seen any of his movies, Humphrey Bogart.
I've seen, like, The African Queen and Casablanca and, you know, all the big ones. And I saw the one horror film he did, which was The Return of Dr. X.
Yeah, that was an interesting one, especially for Bogey fans, because it was, but there are so many of them that you can see why he got that reputation that he had, like The Treasure of the Sierra Madre. And that one, you can see him go from being just a regular old guy to being crazy, and it happens before your very eyes. You don't even really see it. You just realize that near the end of the movie, this guy's nuts.
Mm-hmm.
But he got that way because of the gold, because he went gold crazy. But you didn't notice it because it was gradual. And you started noticing it when he was talking to himself. And like what John Huston used to say, he could have a page of dialogue in one look in his face. Now, that's a sign of a great actor. And
yeah,
he
for sure.
was critical of his own work. Yeah, he'd say, oh, I don't like that. No, I didn't do that right. No, that... I don't think I did that right. And he was always critical of his own work. So if Humphrey Bogart could be critical of his work, then you're in good company being critical of your own work. That was my point of bringing him up. When I say stuff like that, I usually have a good reason for it. In 2016, you did something called Mildly Illegal. So... what was Mildly Illegal? Tell us about that one.
Yeah, that was a short. That was another Matt Close short film, the same director who made Floodblow. Mildly Illegal. I can't remember what the plot was. A lot of Matt's movies are very trippy and strange. But that one, I was the voice of a cartoon man who is a figment of the lead character's imagination. And I think it was as simple as Matt coming up to me and being like, "Hey, sub, can you record like 3 lines for me right now?" And then I just did it. And it's a funny scene, and I remember the short being quite good.
Maybe I'll check that one out if I ever get a chance. Oh, let me see. What else have we not gone over? I'm going to go back to the newer stuff. And especially since I love Jekyll and Hyde stories. So obviously I want to bring up that one. You did a Jekyll versus Hyde. And according to IMDb anyway, it's in post-production, but sometimes they're behind it. So
yeah,
you acted in that. Oh, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, it is in post-production, and that's an interesting one. I co-directed it. The only time I've ever co-directed, I co-directed it with Kai Hornick, and the idea behind it was like, I would play Jekyll, and I would direct the Hyde scenes, and he would play Hyde, and I'd direct the Hyde scenes. So we would switch both roles as director and roles as an actor. It's a strange little modern updating of the story, which places it more in the context of dealing with, tissue regeneration, stem cell research, things like that. It's a pretty interesting take on the novel, and I'm hoping it'll be out sometime early next year. I think it's a very interesting film.
Well, I always like to see the different takes on it, because no matter what, Jekyll and Hyde is always Jekyll and Hyde, even if they have different names. It's still Jekyll
it's
and
true.
Hyde.
But there are
always little interesting takes that each movie has. And the interesting thing is my last guest, I'm sure you probably know at least of him if you don't know him personally, Vernon Wells. He was in 2 Jekyll and Hyde movies, and he was telling about the different takes that each one had. And I had told him that one of the best ones that I saw was called Dr. Jekyll and Sister Hyde. Now, of course,
I'm a big Hammer fan, so I enjoy that one quite a bit.
The Sister Hyde?
Yeah, I'm a very big Hammer fan, so that's one I'm rather fond of.
And I like that one because obviously Dr. Jekyll, who's a man, turns into supposedly his sister Hyde, that's a woman, and so obviously that's different than the usual thing. The only thing that was the same was that she was evil.
And it's Ralph Bates and Martine Beswick, who are two amazing performers, and that is a very fun film.
Oh, yeah. So from what you're saying, I'm sure that I would enjoy the one that you did, and especially the way that you're describing the co-directing thing, because that's all interesting to me, because I pay attention to that stuff. I'm one of those people that... I'll talk about the directing or the editing or whatever that I find interesting, because sometimes I'll just look at a film and, well, I don't really like it, but you know what? This had some great editing in it. And I've had people say to me, what? Like, yeah, it had great editing. And then I have to explain to them what made it have great editing, because a lot of people don't even notice that. It's one of those films that, it's one of those things in the films that a lot of people don't even notice unless they happen to have a bad editor. Then they notice it.
Yeah.
Because an editor, and I'm sure you know this from working in films, an editor is a very important part for people to do. Because if you've got a bad editor, your film isn't going to be very good.
Yeah, no, it's true.
So getting back to you, sorry about going off, so hopefully you don't mind.
No worries.
You did or are doing something called Zombies from Sector 9. So I know what zombies are. Go ahead.
Sorry, that's a film from Belgium. It was another second unit thing. I have seen it. It is finished. I don't know when it's coming out, but I have seen the film. It's a lot of fun. Rob Seuss directed it, and I'm in it for maybe a second. It's that. I'm a zombie in a quick cutaway.
Huh.
Yeah.
Well, hey, if you had fun with it, that's the most important thing.
Yeah, you know, I like helping people out, and that was something Rob asked me to do, so I don't mind doing it.
Well, that's a nice thing about the independent film industry is that you have a lot of that, friends helping friends out, and, hey, can you do this? Yeah, sure. Can you do this for me later? Yeah, sure. And then before you know it, you've got 20 people that are working in a film together, and then they work in another film together, and that's why there's so many people that are in the same film, and same films, because they go from one film to another film to another film, and before you know it, they've all been in all the same films together. Well, not all the same films, but a lot of the same films together. You did something... you're doing something, I guess, because it says on IMDb that it's filming. Frightmares. And now that kind of sounds like it. I'm sorry. Go ahead. Just explain it. Go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, no, it's an anthology. It's Dustin Hubbard's first real attempt at directing a feature, and it's a remake of a shot-on-video film from 1993, directed by Todd Cook. And we've shot the first two segments. I don't know when the third will be shot because things are kind of at a standstill at the moment, mainly because I'd have to travel to the United States to finish it, and that's out of the question for the time being, for obvious reasons.
Yeah.
But the two segments we've shot, I'll tell you, they're amazing. Clint Kelly shot them again, and he's such an amazing cinematographer. And regardless of what he will say, Dustin has a very good grasp on direction, and it's going to be a very special film whenever it's complete, I think.
Well, I love anthologies, so, and especially when they're horror anthologies. I love those anyway, so that's already a plus for me. And if they're done well, they can be really, really, really great, and I'll watch them over and over and over again. And you're probably the same way.
Oh, yeah, if I love a certain film, I will watch it endlessly.
Yeah. There's another film that supposedly is still filming as well, according to IMDb anyway, The Abominations of Frankenstein. And this is what I found interesting, is that you're playing the creature. So tell us about that one.
That is a dream project of mine. We've already shot bits and pieces of it, but we're shooting more of it. We're shooting the entirety of the film in October. It's my Frankenstein film, and I love Frankenstein. It's my favorite novel. This is not an adaptation of the novel, though. This is a weird kind of art house, grindhouse, Jess Franco, Andy Milligan-esque iteration of Frankenstein, where Anthony D.P. Mann, who I call the Christopher Lee of Northern Ontario, because he's played Count Dracula, he's played the Phantom of the Opera, he's played almost all the great Gothic roles, and now he gets to play Frankenstein. He's loose in modern-day Ontario with the aid of his assistant. They're constructing a new creature, which I'll be playing, and I can make no promises. I can very rarely make promises, but one promise I'll make is that this is going to be the strangest Frankenstein film that I think anyone's seen, at least since the Andy Warhol Frankenstein.
Andy Warhol is pretty strange.
Yeah.
And actually, I've seen some stranger ones than his. I've seen some pretty strange Frankenstein films. But some of them are actually good, you know, like what we were discussing before. They can be strange but good, so maybe it'll be really good. Because
people like Oh, sorry. Sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
No. Oh, no, you go right ahead.
I was going to say, if people like the Jess Franco gothic horror films like Erotic Rites of Frankenstein or stuff like Lady Frankenstein or Frankenstein's Castle of Freaks, they'll probably have a lot of fun with this one. It's very much in that mold. It's very grimy and strange, and but it's also got that's why I say for this one of the stranger takes on the story, because it has that aesthetic to it, that vibe, that feeling, but it's got a lot of the novel's soul in it, in the sense that we still follow the creature's journey and all that, and you know, it's a very sympathetic take despite all.
Well, yeah, and I know what you mean. Now, people that have never read the novel, they wouldn't understand it. They only know from what they see in the movies, and most of the movies are nothing like the book. Because book, yeah, the quote-unquote creature is more of a human being than Dr. Frankenstein. You go right ahead.
Sorry, I was just going to say, and we really drive home that, because our Frankenstein is, our Dr. Frankenstein is totally inhuman. Yeah, he's beyond what Shelley wrote, and he's beyond most film versions, because he is I won't spoil anything, because I think the movie's going to surprise a lot of people, but it's the most depraved take on the character that you'll ever see.
Hmm. Now, see, that right there makes me want to see it.
I'm glad.
Yeah, there's, now, I don't know if some of this stuff is true or not, because IMDb doesn't always get updated. But Slaughter Horse, it says that it's in pre-production, but I don't know if that's true. But if you can just tell us a little bit about that one, Slaughter Horse.
Yeah, that's Toby Johansson's dream project. It's been he's been working on it for, I want to say, 3-4 years now. I'm not sure when we're going to get around to shooting my stuff. I play the lead villain. It's a slasher film about a killer in a horse mask who targets evil industrialists. It's a kind of a Paul Verhoeven-esque satire. The script is great, and Toby's got a dynamite imagination. I hope to shoot my stuff for it sooner than later.
Hmm. Yeah, it sounds like it might be interesting. Now, there's another one called Hollywood Werewolf. Now, I don't like every single werewolf film, but a werewolf film that's done really well, I like that, and I like the title of it, Hollywood Werewolf. So, tell us about that one.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on with that one. That's another James Balsamo film. I am not technically in it. I'm a photograph in it, so that's about the extent of that.
Oh, okay, that's interesting. Yeah, see, can't really tell that kind of stuff from IMDb.
No, exactly.
And that's one nice thing about doing these interviews is I've learned some interesting stuff from people. Like one guest of mine, he has a credit on IMDb, but he actually wasn't even in the film. And so he has no reason why, he can't think of a reason why it's even on there, because he wasn't in the film. And, you know, obviously I didn't know about that, so I had asked him about it. And he's like, well, I wasn't even in that film. Like, oh, okay,
yeah.
Well. So, you know, who knows how they get their information sometimes. What about Desert Dwellers?
That's an exciting project. Things are really turning on Desert Dwellers. That's Jacob Dressler's first directorial attempt. It's a post-apocalyptic film, and I have a very fun small role as a lab technician who invents a robot. I don't know when it'll be finished, because like a lot of these things, they're kind of shot piecemeal, But Jacob is really putting everything he has into it. It's a really, really cool idea, and people who love post-apocalyptic films will find a lot to enjoy in it.
Hmm. Yeah, I like post-apocalyptic stuff sometimes. It just depends. If you see enough of them, sometimes they think, okay, this is just the same as the other one I just watched. So hopefully yours isn't like that.
I doubt it will. Jacob's a madman. So.
Yeah, good. I like the crazy stuff. Because, again, it can be crazy, but at least it won't be boring if it's crazy.
No, exactly.
Let's see. What haven't we discussed? Oh, this is, I don't know if this is like a cartoon or what it is, because I haven't heard of this one. Conga TNT, and it says you did the voice. So that's why I don't know if it's, you know, a cartoon or if it's just something where you did a voiceover. But I'll let you tell us about that.
Yeah, Brett Kelly, the great prolific Brett Kelly, who's directed many, 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 many movies. In quarantine, he decided to revive a dormant project of his and, like, use the footage he had and then piece it together into something. And it's an adaptation of the Conga comic books. If anybody's ever seen the 60s film Conga with Michael Gough, it was turned into a comic book series after the fact. And the comics are public domain. So Brett turned the comics into a film, and I voice I'm the voice of a pilot in an airplane who encounters Conga and dies.
Hmm. Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I might have to watch that.
Yeah, hopefully it'll be out sooner than later. I know it's finished, or at least I think it's finished. So there's that.
Well, we have something like 7.5 minutes left. So you're going, and now don't take this wrong. It's not anything against you. I'm just saying you're going through these really quickly. The time is like, ooh, I didn't know that we were going to go this fast. But it's nothing against you. That's fine. If you only want to talk about a movie for a couple of minutes, that doesn't matter to me. Because some of the guests that I've had, they'd go for like 15 minutes talking about one movie. And that's fine, too, because I go by whatever the guest wants. You want to blow through them real quickly, we can blow through them real quickly. But I thought, well, we still got time for a couple more maybe. So there's one called Nasty. Now, that could be anything. So I'll let you explain it.
Nasty is Ken Meehan's film. That's the one where Dino Gore originated from. Dino Gore was done as a fake trailer in Nasty. But it's it's a tribute to the shot on video films of the 90s. Very grimy in that sense, very violent. And it's about a horror movie fan who descends into madness, and Ken plays the role himself. I'm one of the films within the film. I'm one of the movies he's watching that drives him insane. And it was fun because I got to play a Dr. Frankenstein type. I'm in the film within the film. I think it's called The Diabolical Dr. Gore. And that was a bit that I did for Ken's film that I was very happy with. And I don't know when Nasty will come out, but it should be sooner than later. And I think that's one that a lot of people are going to have fun with.
That sounds like a different one. And different is good. So, let's see. I know there's a couple more here that we didn't get to yet. Blood Rites of the Vampire, but vampire with a Y. Tell us about that one.
That's my baby. That is my favorite thing I have done so far. It's a it's a black and white art house piece. It's an homage to Jean Rollin, the great French filmmaker Jean Rollin, and also to German expressionism like Carl Theodor Dreyer and Murnau, of course, and Robert Vine. It's a mood piece about a vampire wandering through a desolate town in October and the different people she encounters. It's a beautiful, beautiful movie. Currently available on Vimeo on demand. Hopefully there's going to be a Blu-ray or a DVD release in the very near future. It's beautiful. It was produced by Brendan Peterson, who's just a crazy artist and an amazing guy. And it stars Vicky Bittis, who is also in my Frankenstein film, and Anthony D.P. Mann, who I mentioned earlier, and Steve Kasson, who's been in nearly 200 films. He was in Necropolis Legion. He was in Life Changer. He's been in a bunch of stuff. And Luc Bernier, who's been in many indie films as well. But yeah, that one's a gem. We shot that last October, and it's gotten great reviews. It's a gorgeous little movie, and it's the one thing I'm the proudest of, I'd say.
Aw. Which means now I'm going to have to try to find it to watch it.
So for sure.
Go ahead.
It's only $1.99 to rent on Vimeo. So.
Ooh. Well, that's definitely worth it.
I'd like to.
So this one is the one that you feel, at least so far, it's like your baby. If you know what I mean. Are you still there? Hello? Okay, it appears that we got cut off, and the show was almost over anyway, so I don't think I'll call him back. I'm just going to go ahead and end the show, and he's calling, I think, but he's calling my phone, so hang on just a minute. This is weird. Okay. Hello. Yeah, you called my phone, so I don't know how this is going to sound on air. But, yeah, the show is almost over anyway. So when you're talking, I'm going to put my phone up to the computer so that people can hear you. So there was only like 2 minutes left anyway. So usually I ask the people to tell any of the listeners how to get a hold of them. Oh, you can't hear me at all?
Oh, I can hear you a bit now.
Oh, okay. So, can you still hear me all right?
Yeah, that's good.
Okay. What I was saying was that usually I have people tell the people how they could get a hold of them, like say on Facebook or whatever. Now, I don't know if it's going to come out right on the air, but we'll go ahead and see if it works. So go ahead and give that information.
Yeah, for sure. Anybody who'd like to reach out to me can reach out through any of the Facebook pages for my films. So you can look up The Abominations of Frankenstein. You can look up Blood Rites of the Vampire. You can look up Like Animator or Slimoids even. Shoot those pages a message if you'd like to get a hold of me. I try to check those as early as possible. And if you're interested in purchasing any of my films, Blood Rites is available on Vimeo On Demand to rent for $1.99. Like Animator and Ouija Mummy will be available on DVD in October through Wild Eye Releasing. And Slimoids is currently available on DVD through Alpha Home Video.
Okay. And there you are. I had to move the phone or else people wouldn't be able to hear me. So now I'm going to go ahead and hang up with you because the show's over anyway now, I guess. And it was very nice having you, and sorry about whatever happened, you know, with your phone. Sorry about that. So hopefully it won't come. Yeah. Well, hopefully it won't sound too bad when the tape is actually comes out. So thank you for being on my show, and have a good night.
You as well. Thank you for having me.
Okay. Goodbye.